I come to give a little bit of presentation on the struggle we are going through as a Squamish nation in BC, but it's not only a struggle with our nation only, but it's a struggle with all Indian people across the world. And we're fighting against colonial governments, you know, in BC, it's like BC, provincial governments and federal governments, and even the American governments also. So, first of all, I'd like to start off by, you know, showing this video.
I'm 24 years old, and I have chosen a life to stand up and talk. I'm not going to sit back and let my traditional land get destroyed more than it already is.
Appears to be a need for land and cash to settle treaties. And if we extend your request to take in all ground land so that the native community would have the ability to stop development on ground land, how do you propose that the non-native community achieve the wealth in order to settle treaties so that we can all move forward? I mean, we all need to move forward together here, and I don't think it's entirely reasonable to put one or the other on hold, even though you may allege that's what's happening.
Squamish is our, what it means is the people of the river, people of the water country. In BC, there's where I come from, there's two rivers that meet, and there's a bunch of lakes all over the place, and that's part of my country. And what Squamish means is the high alpine mountains, and up there, that's where the video was mostly made, was up in Squamish. We have Squamish people have lived on our land, like where we live right now. We have lived on our land for over thousands of years, and we've always been the people, like all the indigenous people across the world. We've been a people that lived at one with nature and with, you know, at one with our surroundings and, you know, all the living creatures, and whether it be plants, animals, or other people, you know. Like, so, I'm just going by some of the information on one of the package back there. The title is the Squamish. And much of the Squamish territory was not visited or seen by Europeans until the Gold Rush of 1858, when a significant number of settlers invaded the land. Encroachment on Squamish territory continued by waves of settlers, miners, traders, loggers, railroad builders, clergy, and government officials. Through this time, the rights and title of Squamish were being alienated as people were driven from their homelands. In 1868, Chief Nisqually realized the impact of contact with Governor James Douglas, agreed on a reserve which would be set aside for the use and benefit of the Squamish people. This reserve was called the Nisqually Douglas Reserve and is over 1 million acres in size. The Nisqually Douglas Reserve was subsequently reduced to three small present-day reserves, which is now called Adams Lake, Little Shuswap, and Nisqually. I myself would come from the Nisqually Indian Band, and most of the members that were, the community members that were shown on a video, would come from either the three bands, Nisqually, Adams Lake, or Little Shuswap. Since 1871, when British Columbia became a part of Canada, the province has maintained in practice of allotting land to settlers and development companies without taking Squamish title and rights into account. This I want to say a little bit that's not in here is back in first European contact in the Suquamish country. There is a, I don't know if any few people know BC at all, but Kamloops was a main fort back at the time. And there is a bunch of reserves like all along there. But back then they weren't called reserves, they were just like places where, you know, our people lived. And there's this, these gold miners and from and trappers there from the Hudson's Bay Company, they came into Kamloops, and one of their plans to eliminate us is their opposition was to go up and down the Thompson River and the Fraser River, which is the main heart of our territory. What they did is they took hundreds of smallpox-infested blankets and they handed them out just to the men back in those days. And they were on their way up to Williams Lake, which is about 300 kilometers, about a three-hour drive from Kamloops. And on their way back from Williams Lake, the men were just started like dropping like flies, dying and getting sick and everything from smallpox. And they only gave certain people, like one or two people, you know, immunizations from smallpox at that time. And, so all of these men and, you know, Suquamish men and were all dying, and, you know, it was leaving their families, you know, like with no father or nobody to look after their families. So then the Europeans, you know, the people from the Hudson Bay Company came in, then they, you know, they started looking after their families that way, and that's one of the ways how they, you know, got into like living in Suquamish country at first. That was back then. So under the since 1871, when British Columbia became a part of Canada, the province maintains under the Canadian Constitution, the province has assumed exclusive jurisdiction over land use. Federal policy did not recognize the inherent land rights of the Suquamish. All this took place despite the fact that the terms of union agreement recognized the imperial legal policy, including the Royal Proclamation of 1763, which again was upheld in, you know, the Royal Proclamation was upheld in, you know, it was revised in 1982, and under their in 82 the Constitution of Canada was revised, and back at that time there was Brian Mulroney was the Prime Minister at the time, and he wanted to get rid of, you know, like native rights, which was upheld in, you know, Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution. So back in 81, 82, there was a big, it was called the Constitution Express, and I don't know if anybody in here is old enough to remember back then, but I myself, I was like about 11, 12 years old at the time. I remember my parents, they were going off onto the Constitution Express, and back in 82, there was a big demonstration on Parliament Hill, where they had this, demonstrated the elimination of Section 35 of the Constitution, and we won the case back then, so our rights as Native people are upheld in the Canadian Constitution, and this is, the last I checked, it was like, it's good for all Natives across Canada, so I'm pretty sure, I think. But throughout history, the Canadian government has systematically attempted to exterminate and assimilate the Suquamish people to avoid recognizing them as peoples. Some of the government policies that they used was, the main one was the enactment of the Indian Act in 1865, I'm pretty sure. And the Indian Act is like, it's all basically designed to divide and cause fighting amongst our people. And establishment of Indian reserves, you know, back then, like before European contract, there was never any reserves. It was just like communities. And, you know, everybody was people. You know, everybody was recognized as people. They weren't recognized as like Ganasataki or Ganawagi. They were recognized as, you know, a whole nation. Or back in BC, it was Suquamish or Thompson, you know. Now we're getting separated even more, like in the Musqueam Indian Band, the Adams Lake Indian Band, the Little Shuswap Indian Band, and the Suquamish Nation. There's 17 different bands, and that's, you know, it's like each band holds has about anywhere from 200 to 1200 people in each band. The Squamak have finally fought for recognition in their title and rights in 1910. The Squamak, Okanagan, and Plateau tribes petitioned Sir Wilfrid Laurier for recognition of their title and rights. And in 1926, Chief William Parrish of the Nisqually Indian Band traveled to England to seek an address of the Queen. It was denied over there at that time. Some of the court recognition of the, you know, our people's Squamak title on Squamak title and rights was like what I mentioned earlier in 1982, the rights of, you know, the rights of Indigenous people were included in Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution. The existing Aboriginal and treaty rights of Aboriginal peoples in Canada are hereby recognized and affirmed. Neither Canada nor the provincial government can extinguish Aboriginal title without Indigenous consent because of the constitutional protection in Section 35. The Supreme Court of Canada and its Delgamuukw decision in 1997 reaffirmed and recognized the collective land rights of Indigenous peoples. Aboriginal title is a concept recognizing Indigenous collective propriety interests based upon the fact that Indigenous people lived and used their traditional territories before European contact and settlement. It follows from diverse Indigenous legal system and it's enshrined in settler and Indigenous laws. The Delgamuukw decision, some of the things that it says in that decision is Aboriginal title is a land right and a property right. Aboriginal title is a collective right. Aboriginal title is unique. Aboriginal title is a right to exclusive occupation. And this was won by Delgamuukw was it was Northwestern BC in I think it's communities the communities close to that reserve was Terrace BC, Prince Rupert. It was about an hour and a half east of Prince Rupert. And the Canadian government adamantly refuses to abide by its own court and recognizing title and rights of Indigenous peoples in consular matters, ignoring their own laws, like you just witnessed on this video. Like they all, like, anytime a Native person wants to stand up and talk about our rights, you know, they're always like smeared or disinformation is sent out to the public, who were made out to be terrorists and stuff like that. Now, I don't know if any of you remember, but there's this guy on the video. He said, you know, like when a nation of people or a group of people is branded a terrorist, and they're, you know, we really have to look at that. Like, who are the real terrorists when we're just people standing up for our rights and using just words? When there's people coming in, like the RCMP or whoever, you know, like the armies or whatever, and they're using like pepper spray, gas, you know, like all of their stuff that they use against people like us, anybody that want to stand up for their own rights, right? Like, who are the real terrorists? You know, it's a big question right there. Like. Some of the things that were on the video, like back in, I think it was 2001, there was a demonstration up in Sun Peaks. Part of it was on there on the video. It was much music was in Sun Peaks, and they did a bunch of different groups and stuff like that got together up in Sun Peaks, and they did their music thing and everything. And we did a demonstration at that time. There was much music that said they wouldn't come back because they don't believe in, you know, squashing Native rights and stuff like that. They said the only time they're going to come back is when Native rights and title are going to be listened to by the governments. And but at that time, like, there was there was a few people arrested. All the people that have been arrested so far, they've been either they're under 18 years old when they get arrested, or they're women, or they're children, or they're elders. And all of the people that have been arrested so far, I'm not sure, I can't remember the exact count, but I think there's like over 45 people arrested on about over 80 different charges for each and every one of them. And I just like to touch up on some of the expansion, proposed expansion that this Ikubo guy, I think he's the head of Nippon Cable based out of Japan, which is one of the, Nippon Cable is one of the richest organizations in the world, I think. I'm pretty sure. It's up there anyway. It's one of the biggest money makers in the world. But some of their proposed expansion, what they have planned is they're investing $70 million into Sun Peaks. They have a 9-hole golf course now, but they're planning to expand it to 18 holes. They're having it's a 135-unit townhouse complex that they're planning on building right near some lakes and some creeks up there. And Delta Hotels has one hotel up there, and they have a bunch of underbranches of hotels up there already. I think there's 7 of them up there at last count, but they're building more. Right now, as it stands right now, there's one skiable mountain right now. And this year, this summer, they're planning on building, one mountain that they have already. Like, the ski runs are already there, but they don't have the chairlifts, but they're planning on building, they are building them right now. The chairlifts on one mountain called Mount Morrissey. And they're planning on building on there's 5 mountains like real close together there, and they're planning on, you know, making all of those into skiable mountains. With mountaintop restaurants on top of each and every one of them, which already there is one already on top of one. Okay, back in our struggle up at Sun Peaks began in October 2000. And the very first time it was the very first camp out up there, it was at first it was just called a camp out. And it was nothing but young children, like 17 was the oldest. I'm pretty sure, 17 was the oldest person up there. And the youngest was about 8. And they all, you know, they were all active in speaking up for the land, protection of the land, the animals, the plants, and our rights, not only our rights, but our, you know, the water and everything. And, the purpose of the center was to monitor development at Sun Peaks Resort, inform the public and tourists of our opposition to the expansion project, and reestablish ourselves on their lands and to protect them. In November 2000, the center was moved to a safer location across the highway. The site was researched and found to be Crown land in June, it was researched by the Canadian government, obviously. In June 2001, the British Columbia Assets and Land Corporation issued a license to Sun Peaks at this site, even though we had been living at this site for 10 months. Sun Peaks then sought an injunction to remove us from our land. That was the teepee that on the side of the road. That was the first camp in the Kukwako Protection Center, and that was moved. You know, their reason for moving that was they said it was a safety issue when great snow plows came by. which it wasn't. It wasn't really a safety issue. Like the snow plows, you were pushing the snow on the other side of the road, on the other side of the road. And at that time, four people were arrested for staying at that camp before they ripped it down. The cops and the Sun Peaks organization, and some people from the BC Assets and Lands Corporation, they came up and they issued the order to remove the camp, and four people stayed up there. Two elders, one youth and one elder, they were all arrested, and that was shown on the video. The actions continued throughout 2001 and 2002, with many demonstrations being held at the resort and other locations. Sun Peaks officials, the RCMP, the provincial government, including the Ministry of Highways, Environment and Forestry, have all conspired to drive us from our homelands through different excuses, like what I just explained about safety issues and snow plows and everything like that. And one of the safety issues that they had was they had these right below the mountains of the ski runs. They had these trails where people were mountain biking or ATV riding. In the winter, they go snowmobiling, and they said that we were in their way, which we weren't. Like there was 100 feet between the nearest snowmobile trail from our camp, and they said it was a safety issue. Some of their excuses for moving us. In May 2001, a peaceful demonstration was held in province of the British Columbia Assets and Lands Office. That was part of that was on there. This action was held to demonstrate our adamant opposition to the continued theft and subsequent sale, lease, and creation of recreation agreements on our unceded lands. 18 people were arrested and now face various charges related to this action. One of the people arrested was Sarah Denault, an 80-year-old elder. She is Sarah Denault. She was on the video. She was speaking on a few different occasions in there. In June 2001, all the bands, the Misconath Indian Band, Adams Lake Indian Band, the Little Shoe Shop Indian Band, a bunch of us got together and we decided to build a log cabin up in Skokwekel. And we finally got it all built and everything. We put it up on we erected the log building up in Skokwekel. And our main purpose for that log building was, to go hunting and berry picking, and they use that cabin for hunting, berry picking cabin. As soon as we got it erected and everything, and a couple of us, we stayed up there two nights we slept in that cabin. And we started to run out of food or something like that. And I can't remember why we had to go down to town, but we had to go downtown that night. Right away that night, the building was burnt down. We don't know who did it. Cops won't investigate. Whenever, off reserve, the building is burnt down, and they think it's an Indian will get arrested right away.